We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Riverfront. This is episode number 404 of the world's somewhat dangerous podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. With me once again, as you see down below, my buddy Nate. How are you today, Nate?
Could not be better. Still shaking off some of the cobwebs from the holiday eggnog that you said I wasn't supposed to have, but we're here.
It's banned in my home. Join us this week. I'm really excited to have our buddy Wick Terrell on the podcast. Wick, of course, is the guy you want to blame for RedReporter.com, basically. Been in charge over there for a while, and fantastic Red Reporter podcast, and just one of the funniest Reds analysts out there. How are you today, Wick?
I'm fantastic. I'm excited to talk to you guys about the scintillating Reds offseason and how optimistic we are about where they are going forward. But more importantly, to look back on what actually was one of the better years in Cincinnati Reds' recent history this past season and relive some of the fun parts about what we just got a chance to watch this past year.
Yeah, you know, thank you for that, because that is the topic of the show. As you know, if you click the link or listen to it on whatever podcast device you're listening to, we're going to do the year in review and basically the top 10 moments of the 2021 Red season. Now, the Reds did not make the playoffs. They had, September was frustrating for all of us, but it was something I want to keep reminding myself, even, because we've all gotten a little cynical since the season ended and with, aligning payroll to, I'm not getting into our buddy Nick Kroll and the fun things he says, but, this season, when you consider our lifetimes as Reds fans, this was actually up there in terms of, for recent history. I mean, it's kind of sad to say that, but there were a lot of fun moments this season, right, Nate?
I'm not going to let anybody forget this, and that's going to come up a couple more times during this episode, was that for all the negativity, like, we were good for a big portion of this. That doesn't happen too often.
Yeah. I mean, it was – we literally had meaningful baseball being played in September in Cincinnati, and that's – what's that like? I barely even remembered it. Overall, it was a fantastic season in a lot of ways, right, Wick?
Yeah, when you sent the outline for what we were going to talk about on the show, you mentioned that they were 12 games over 500 in August, and I was like, that's right, they were. They actually were. They were in a playoff spot in, 5-6 weeks to go when the schedule was supposed to start rounding into form for them to win some games down the stretch. Unfortunately, St. Louis just decided to not ever lose a baseball game again. But I think that's in part, that's why what we've seen since the season ended has been so frustrating, because there were so many positives this last year. They had so many good aspects to it. They had a good mix of youth and of veteran players. There was kind of that perfect combo for what you would expect a good franchise to be like, hey, we're on to something here, because of what we saw last year. And instead, they've kind of taken a turn. But so it is easy to overlook the fact that there were a lot of positives that 2021 season threw at us. And it's going to be fun to kind of look back on those, because depending on how aggressive they want to get about kind of throwing curveballs this winter, a lot of what was good about 2021 should still be around going into next year. And I think that's the exciting part about it.
That's exactly where I kind of end up when I start getting cynical about this team. It's like, yeah, they're, ownership, blah, blah, blah. We complain about it all the time, but you look at this roster and you look at who's coming back, it's still a pretty good team in a lot of ways. And yes, if they really cared about winning, they could really take the next step. We don't want to talk about that right now, but yeah, it's kind of a fun franchise. I called them the Rowdy Reds early in the year. I didn't actually call them that. My editor over at Cincinnati Magazine came up with that for the headline, and I thought it was pretty good because they were kind of rowdy early in the year. We've got a couple of those moments that we're going to cover, but I don't know. It was a really fun team. It did not end well because we are Cincinnati sports fans, and it never ends well. But that doesn't mean that, you know, what do they say? The real success was the friends you made along the way. No, there was, you know, a lot of winning games too. So let's go ahead and dive into this list. And I think the way we'll do this is we'll just go around announcing what we'll start at 10, count down to 1, and Wick, you're the guest here. I'm gonna let you if you want to go ahead and take number 10 on our list.
Number 10
Reds moments of 2021.
Top 10, number 10, you've got Votto's 1,000th RBI, which rolled in on June 30th of this year. You know, one of a trio of pretty big, pretty significant milestones for Joey this year. A lot of round numbers he hit. But for that one, I think there was certainly some specific sentimentality, I guess is a way I can – that's certainly two words you can put together about it, because for so much of his career, he's kind of been lampooned as not being an RBI guy. So to get to that kind of round number, to get that comma in there, suddenly you look up, you're like, for a guy who wasn't really an RBI guy for his career, he's got 1,000 of them now, which is a lot more than so many of the other guys that throughout the course of the Reds franchise history that have been considered clutch RBI guys don't have to their name. And so I thought that was certainly an important one for him, and one I'm sure he's glad he's got ticked off on his career ledger so far.
Yeah, you know, it happened, as we said, in June, the end of June, and it was a home run to lead off the third inning, and, you know, just the fifth Reds player ever to collect 1,000 RBIs. You know, that's not bad, you know. And he's an RBI guy. For a guy that's had Drew Stubbs and people like that, Billy Hamilton hitting in front of him for most of his career, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about Billy Hamilton, obviously, but he had 1 year with Shin-Soo Choo, and otherwise no real high on-base percentage guys really hitting in front of him until this year. So 1,000 RBIs is actually a pretty impressive feat. So that home run when he got his 1,000th, that's the number 10 moment according to us collectively. Nate, any thoughts on that?
No, not really. Just want to add, like, you think of Joey Votto, you think of an approach kind of guy. It's all about his at bats. It's nice to recognize that he's done some other things too. That guys get on base in front of him. He's taken care of the job time and time again. And, you know, it's a testament to the longevity of his career. And, you know, it won't be the last time we talk about him today for sure.
Yeah. We're going to have some Votto comments today. No question about it. It is kind of appropriate, I think, that it was a solo home run that for his 1,000th RBI, because he's kind of been carrying his team on his back his whole career. So number 10 on the Reds' top 10 moments of 2021 was Joey Votto's 1,000th RBI. Nate, you want to take number 9 on our list?
Yeah, let's rock and roll. Number 9 for us is on September 27th, the Cincinnati Reds clinched a winning record this season. We touched on it earlier that has barely ever happened. We won't count anything that happened in the shortened season 2020, but I think it was 2013 was the last time they had a winning record. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I think you can count on single digits how many times they've had a winning record since I can remember watching baseball games.
That's probably true for Wick as well. Ugh.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, it is. It's funny you mentioned Shin-Soo Choo when we're talking about Joey Votto being ability to actually like put some runs across the board. It's nice if they had another productive leadoff hitter finally for one of the few times over that 30-year window. It's no surprise to me to look up and be like, yeah, when you put somebody in the number one spot who can get on base a lot and score runs, suddenly you win a lot more baseball games than you do when you have the exact opposite of that. So correlation, causation, whatnot, but it is nice to note that it is an important aspect of how to win games is to put somebody out there that can get on base a lot, the most often in the lineup, and actually score some runs for you.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
Very good point. I would be curious to see if there is more of a correlation, and somebody could go back and pull the numbers when the last, you know, the years when the Reds have a decent leadoff hitter, how they turn out.
Well, we don't remember very many of those years recently.
It could be a short article. It's
perfect. Right. So we're talking, of course, the number 9 on the list is September 27th of this year when the Reds defeated the Pittsburgh Pirates by a score of 13-1 to clinch their 82nd victory of the year. Winning pitcher that day, You all know who it was, right? It's so obvious. I can't believe you're not yelling it out. Reaver San Martin.
Oh, of course, yes.
His first big league win. Yeah, Dory Moretta pitched a scoreless inning that day as well. So, and that was the 82nd victory for the Reds, clinching a winning season. And because of the frustration of the Reds falling out of the race a little bit, you know, it didn't go unnoticed, but we didn't celebrate it like maybe we. Although should you really celebrate winning 82 games? You know that. Man, we're Reds fans. Whatever.
If there's a lot of games left to play when you hit 82, sure. Unfortunately, there were only a handful left at that point. They didn't win all. Yeah. That wasn't enough. Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah, they should try to get their 82nd win like in, I don't know, early August.
Yeah, why not?
Seems like a better plan. All right, so that's number 9 on our list of the top 10 Reds moments of 2021. The Reds actually clinching a winning record. And again, let's not discount that because of how rare. You just heard Nate and Wick both talk about how rare it was. Number 8 on our list is kind of it's not really a moment. We're kind of cheating a little bit here. But it is being able to watch this rookie, the kind of rookie crop this year. And we're talking mostly about Jonathan India, Tyler Stevenson, Vladimir Gutierrez. You got to add him. And you got some other. Dory Moretta is a guy that is going to be in the Reds bullpen probably this year. And, you know, he made his debut. And, Jose Barrero's, he didn't make his debut this year, but, you know, he did get up and he's going to hopefully play a big role in 2022 for the Reds. So, again, it comes back to that discussion about being cynical, but the Reds have this, and we'll talk a little more about India later, obviously, but they have this kind of core here. And Tyler Stevenson is the one that I'm most excited about in this group. I think he's going to make more All-Star games than any of these guys eventually. That's my opinion, and I'm probably going to jinx him like I do everybody. But that really was Wick. I'll let you comment on that. Really was. If you're looking to be excited about the future of the Reds, we got these young guys with some real talent. Some guys like Gutierrez who didn't expect necessarily, but who can be the core of a pretty good team going forward if they'll kind of fill some pieces in around them.
So admittedly, I didn't put a ton of thought into the actual ordering of my list, but number 3 on my list, it was June 5th, which was a 5-2 win over the St. Louis Cardinals, but it was the first day that Jonathan India got put in the leadoff spot. And, we talked off camera to start this that, if I was ranking top 10 in September versus ranking now, I was looking a little bit further back on 2021 then, and I've got an eye towards the future a little bit more now. But when you find a huge spot in your lineup and your defense at second base and the guy who can be your leadoff hitter. And he's a rookie. I mean, that's a cornerstone piece that you can put in there. Even if he's not as good next year or the year after that he was this year, you saw enough from him where you can look up and say, you put that name in ink and you build around that going forward. And I think that was the day that the Reds found a core piece for what they're going to want to have going forward. That's huge. You know, when we look back on what 2021 was, hopefully the fact that they actually had a winning record kind of fades as an importance going forward. But they found an important piece and an important cog and how he fits very well in there. And June 5th was the day that they finally gave him that opportunity to be a much more important part of this team than he had been going forward. And he took off. I mean, he absolutely crushed going forward and won Rookie of the Year. So we're talking about how good the rookies were. I might not be as excited about Tyler Stevenson as you are, but I'm very excited about Tyler Stevenson. But there was that day where the Reds found something concrete and tangible. And I think that's a big takeaway as we move further into their career on what they found that day.
Yeah, no, you know, that really, in retrospect, we could have easily put that day that he moved into the leadoff spot in this top 10 list because it was kind of a momentous occasion. We didn't really know at the time. I mean, a lot of us were excited that it was actually happening. It looked like it had to happen. It was necessary, but man, a guy like that at his age who many years, that's huge. It's something that the Reds have been searching for years.
Years.
Nate, any thoughts on the rooks?
No, I love that point. We talked about Shin Soo-Chu earlier, and we had him for such a short amount of time. It's awesome going into a season knowing that we have that leadoff position locked up for years to come, and probably for the first time in my Reds fandom.
Hold on, not since Willie Taveras.
I miss Deion Sanders.
Oh, there we go, prime time. Yeah, he's out doing this
thing. Willie Taveras.
Oh, man. Willie Taveras, Corey Patterson. That was a tough time to be a Reds fan.
That's It's tough to remember that time being a Reds fan, much less going through it at the end. Yeah.
Why?
Absolutely. Right. So that's number eight on our list. Just getting to watch this rookie class. I'll just say about Tyler Stevenson quickly that, and the reason why I'm so high on him is just that the dude can absolutely mash. I mean, he can hit. And how many catchers around the league can hit? And, you know, dearly departed Tucker Barnhart, maybe I shouldn't phrase it that way, but, man, what a great Reds career. But to me, and I've mentioned this a few times on the show, watching Tucker Barnhart kind of work with Tyler Stevenson pregame, working on the defensive aspects of the game. He knew that Tyler Stevenson was there to take his place, and that's why Tucker is always going to be one of my favorites. I think if Tyler Stevenson can kind of he's not going to be Tucker Barnhart defensively, but if he's an average defensive player with an above average bat, that's an all star. I mean, there aren't very many of those in baseball, and so. You know,
and if the DH shows up in the National League as well, suddenly you've got the ability to get him in the lineup a lot more often, save those knees, rotate him through first base going forward. Like, he's a bat that doesn't just look like it's somebody that you want to have in there catching 110 games. You want to get him in the lineup somewhere every single day when you can. And I think that's something that it's very fortuitous timing if that's what ended up happening this winter when the Reds have a guy that's that young into his career. It seems like it's going to mesh very, very well, those two things. So hopefully.
Yeah, I've been anti-DH for years, but I think Tyler Stevenson may make me change my mind, because you're right. They need him in the lineup 150 times, and as a catcher, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, all right, that's number eight on our list. Number seven.
DH.
What's that?
The Wick just
what's
made
that? DH? Yeah, he did. Wick just convinced us to support universal designated hitter.
Okay. Hey, baby, we'll pick up Joey Votto's option, too. We'll keep him around for an extra year, too, right?
Okay.
That's a conversation that I kind of had with a couple people earlier this week. They got that option, you know, coming for Joey Votto, and I thought a couple years ago there's no chance. But now Joey has made me, and maybe this is something we need to talk to on one of these Joey Votto items on the list, but he's made me think.
Hey, what's next?
What's next, Wick? Why don't you tell us what's number seven on our list?
Number seven on the list is Joey Votto's 300th home run, which came on April 30th. And I do have a little tidbit here on my handy dandy phone notepad over here. Not to say that Joey Votto was pressing, but the start of the season, when I look back, I think I remembered it, but I didn't remember it as well as I did when I actually looked at the number. Entering play on April 30th, he was hitting .220 with a .290 on base percentage and a .396 slugging percentage. After he hit a home run, so when he woke up, actually, I take that before he hit the run, when he woke up on the morning of April 30th, from April 30th to the end of the season, he hit .277, .395, .605. That's an even 1,000 OPS from the day he hit his 300 home run on. That's his ISO was the second best ISO in all of baseball behind only Shohei Ohtani from that point forward. So it was a great moment, obviously, but it's almost one of those ones where you look up and it's like he got the weight off his shoulders. And maybe, just maybe, I mean, Joey knows this, but he looked up and said, I have hit 300 home runs. I'm a power hitter. You know, I can hit these again.
Let's do this.
It just took off from there. And so it was one of those things where the individual moment was cool, but it was like the floodgates opened up for him after that. And so that was a very high on my, I think I had that on number, I do. I have it on number two on my list of best moments of the year.
Okay. So you're criticizing, you're coming on my show and criticizing my list. That's all right. We'll deal with that. But Nate, any thoughts on that? Before right. Nate, go ahead.
I think it's great. You got to expect that these players, they take account of their accolades, and they are aware of their place in history. And that 300 home run barometer is important to a lot of Hall of Fame voters. And you kind of wonder if, like you said, he woke up that morning and was like, hey, I get this. It's just another check in that box that gets me into Cooperstown.
Yeah, you know, it was, again, it was, it came on April 30th, so early in the season, but you're right, he had been struggling up to that point. It was against the Cubs. It gave the Reds the lead for good in a win over the Cubs, so that's a good thing. He got a curtain call, which is always, I don't know, that's one of my favorite things. But, the thing was, at the time, it put him third on the list for all-time home runs for this franchise. And then later in the season, of course, he passed Frank Robinson, where Frank Robinson had 324. Joey Votto ends the season with 36 home runs, which is crazy, which gives him 331 in his career. So he's second only to Johnny Bench, who was a decent little player as well. And I don't know. It's just we all know that Joey Votto's a Hall of Famer, but these little things like this and then, you know, obviously the way he ended the season are the things that are going to get Hall of Fame voters kind of making them pay attention, I think. I think he's clearly – I don't know if he'd be first ballot. He should be. But he will get in early, I think, the Hall of Fame. What do you think, Wick, on the Hall of Fame? When's he going to get in?
Yeah, I think he might be second, maybe third ballot at this point. I mean, you look up the round numbers he's hitting right now, you would have loved to see him hit 2 or 3 years ago. Obviously, the decline years when he was only basically as good as Jonathan India was this year in his decline years set him back a little bit. But he had injuries. He was a 24-year-old rookie, so the numbers didn't stack up as early as I think they otherwise would. But the rate stats – which obviously I think are much more important as the Baseball Writers Association of America kind of transitions out of some of the older traditional stats and some of the newer writers begin to get the ability to vote on these kind of things. 304 to 500 stands out. I mean, that's the list of people that have done that for that in career. And even if Joey slips down to 296 or whatever it was by the time he retires batting average wise, it's those things that stand out. And I think when you stack him up on those kind of levels, he's as elite as they get. He absolutely is as elite as they get. And, you know, in a game where 27, you have to get somebody out 27 times to beat them, the best player of his generation at not making outs it's important. It's hugely important. And I think that's going to stack up very well down the road. I'm also interested to see where Todd Helton finishes this year as well, because a player who kind of stacks up very similar to how Joey's been, but he's getting support. I think he's a Hall of Famer, and I think he will be a Hall of Famer because people will begin to recognize it going down the road.
Yeah, I think you're right. Nate, any thoughts?
Do you think Votto will be the first ever first ballot Hall of Famer who turned 65 that year?
You're saying he's going to play until he's 60?
60? I hope so. Maybe I get to write about it for the 20 years. That'd be fantastic, for sure.
Well, there is, you know, the question now all of a sudden that we have is how long can he keep going? Because now I don't know what – you know, I'm not going to doubt him ever again because he'd put up this season at 37. And Wick was talking about 300, 400, 500. It's 300 batting average, 400 on base, 500 slugging, which is a very rare feat in baseball history. I think what's good, actually, and Wick, you also mentioned about how, you know, we're getting some new Hall of Fame voters over the next 10 years. We have been already. I think the fact that Votto led the National League in on-base percentage 7 times is going to carry great weight in terms of being a Hall of Famer. Because who are the other players who led their league in on-base percentage 7 times in their career? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, including Votto. The other 5 are Ted Williams, Barry Bonds, Babe Ruth, Rogers Hornsby.
4 greatest hitters of all time, yeah.
Right, yeah. Rogers Hornsby and Ty Cobb.
Who? Who's
that? A bunch of inner circle Hall of Famers. So I think he gets it. It may take till a second or third time, but he's absolutely going to be in the Hall of Fame and certainly deserving.
My favorite note about that, before we could go on for Votto talk for 17 hours on this, but my favorite part about it is that's not by accident. That's because Joey was like, I'm gonna lead the league in on base percentage. And then he goes out and does it. Like that's my favorite part about it. It's not that he does what he does and doesn't know about the stats and looks up and is like, oh, I love the league in on base percentage. He's like, no, I'm going to lead the league in this, and then does it. And everybody knows that's what he's trying to do, and he still does it. That's my favorite part about it. So.
Well, and that correlates with what happened this year, which is that, all right, my bat's getting a little slower. You know, I've got to change things. And so he becomes maybe not quite as productive, but productive in a different way. He starts hitting home runs. And no one else can do that. Only the greatest players in history can do things like that. And that's he's a unicorn, and I'm so glad we got a chance to watch him.
For sure.
Final thoughts about that, Nate?
I'm looking forward to a later lockout era podcast when it's just the Joey Votto extravaganza. Wick, we'll have you back on here. We'll do 3 hours, 4 hours.
I've got tabs and bookmarks and galore. I can jump right into it right now. It's my favorite damn thing to talk about.
The truth of the matter is we really should have just a Joey Votto podcast at some point because that dude is special. So I want to say before – I meant to mention this at the beginning – and I did before we move on to, obviously, number 7 was Joey Votto's 300th home run. Before we go to number 6, as we were putting together this list, I wrote down some ones that I thought, oh, these moments have to be on there. And then I said, well, let me do a quick Google search. And when I did, two of the first ones that came up were for Reds' top moments of 2021 was a piece that I wrote for Cincinnati Magazine. That's kind of some of the season, and saying, you know, there were some good days. But then also was a piece that, ironically, I guess, because I Googled it after I invited Wick to come on the program, was a piece that Wick wrote over at redreporter.com. And
yes, no, it worked. Yes, search engine optimization. It worked.
That's right, exactly. And I put on our show outline, because I love the kind of subtitle for that post over there by Wick. Moments come and go, but phrases you find framed at Target last forever. Maybe that should be the title of this show. Oh, Wick.
You know, I'd forgotten I wrote that until you put it back on the outline and I read it again. I'm like, I'm sure it sounded great at the time. It may have happened, right?
Well, late December 2021, I chuckled at it. So, I don't know. Maybe it's worth something, right?
Here we go.
All right, Nate, you want to give us number six on our list of the top 10 Reds moments of 2021?
Number six is our dual All-Star Game starters, Jesse Winker and Nick Castellanos. Couple quick stats for you. It is the first time the Reds have had two All-Star Game starters since 2013. That was Votto and Brandon Phillips. The first outfield starter since 2007, a young fellow named King Griffey Jr., who you may have heard of him. And my favorite one, the first time the Reds have had two outfielders starting in the All-Star Game since 1956. Gus Bell. And can you guess the other person?
Wally Post.
Both very close. Frank Robinson.
It was Frank.
Oh, yeah. That guy was okay.
I was thinking he was the third base at that point still.
Yeah.
What really excited me about this fact, this thing the most, is that All-Star votes are largely fan-based. In Cincinnati, we talk about it all the time. It's a medium-sized market. People aren't usually paying a ton of attention. The national media certainly isn't covering the Reds because they're told to by their superiors. You have to sort of force your way into the public consciousness when you play for Cincinnati a lot of the time, and both these guys did that. You know, injuries kind of slowed them down in the second half, but man, first half they were both mashing and both like MVP candidates up to that point, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, you know, two of the three outfield starters were Cincinnati Reds, and that's just not something that happens, and it's because they just mashed and mashed and mashed. You know, one of these days I'll talk about, we're going to write about the 1957 when the Reds stuffed the ballot box and, you know, to get all the starters in the All-Star game. But that's not what happened here necessarily. It's just that those guys were fantastic. Wick?
Yeah, I was going to say they deserved it. That was the coolest part about it. There was no ballot stuffing. It was, they just, you look at the sheer numbers and Bryce Harper, Juan Soto, great players. The numbers looked up, and it was like, no, Jesse Winker and Nick Castellanos deserve to be starting the All-Star game. And I think that's, you know, what Winker getting hurt again down the stretch. As I look back on what 2021 could have been, I think that's the probably the most frustrating aspect of all of it, is because he had begun to put together, you know, he'd been good and been injured and hurt and sidelined in years before, but this looked like the year where it was all finally coming together for the guy that, I think when Jonathan Mayo of MLB Pipeline was talking about Jesse Winker when he was still a prospect in AA, said, this guy is going – no, let me rephrase that. He picked him to win the batting title in the minor leagues that year because he said, this guy's probably going to win one at the big league level too. And he's always had that talent, always been on the cusp of being one of the best offensive players in baseball. And at least he had his first half this year because he got some validation from that, because he was absolutely smoking the ball up until injuries kind of sidelined for the end of the year. But that was one of my best moments of this year, was getting a chance to watch Jesse hit as well as he did.
Yeah, dude's not Jack Armstrong, okay? This guy's the real deal, and he's coming back. Nick Castellanos, no, but so a little trivia time here for you guys. This is unfair, but you mentioned that Bryce Harper didn't get the start. Juan Soto didn't get the start. We'll see how much research you all did. Who was the third outfield starter for the National League in the All-Star game this year? In between, it was the center fielder in between Jesse Winker in left field and Nick Castellanos in right field. Anybody got a guess?
Was it Starling Marte?
It was not, but close in some ways.
I can't even remember which team he was on at the All-Star break.
It was Starling Marte's former team.
Jim Edmonds?
I think it might have been Jim. Nate, I gave you the rules of this podcast. You're not supposed to mention his name. You're not supposed to mention his name on this podcast. That's in the rules. It was Brian Reynolds, center fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
And also who is probably deserving as well. He had a fantastic year. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good player. Really good player. Certainly deserving. Castellanos batted fifth. Jesse Winker batted sixth for the National League All-Stars. Castellanos went 0 for 2 in the game. Jesse Winker went 0 for 1 with a walk. Castellanos was replaced by Juan Soto. Jesse Winker was replaced on it by Chris Bryant. So, I don't know. I'm still a sucker for that All-Star game talk. You know, the discussions of who makes it, who doesn't make it. I watch the game because I'm an idiot. Okay. Number five on our list. That was number six. Jesse Winker and what's that guy's name? Castellanos? I don't remember him. He's gone. But starting in the All-Star game. Number five on the list. Maybe. I thought this would be a little higher when I first started thinking about this list. But this is where we landed. And we'll leave it there. And that's Wade Miley throwing a no-hitter. Wade Miley, of course, on May the 7th, he got the Hulk tattoo. I'll let one of y'all talk about that if you want. Threw a no-hitter and just reminded me of Tom Browning so much in the process. And I don't know, Wade Miley, who the Reds gave away for free, but we're not trying to talk about what happened since the season ended. I don't know. That was just as much fun as I've had watching a game in a while. I mean, he was masterful. 8 strikeouts, only 114 pitches. In this day and age, that's not that many. Cleveland's average exit velocity was 84.7.
Same as his fastball.
That's where I was going. Pretty much the same as Wade Miley's fastball. Either of you have any thoughts about Wade Miley? That was a fun night. Just, you know, watching Wade Miley, a guy who was so much better than most people expected this year, and ended up being one of the most valuable players, maybe the most valuable player on the team, if you look at it. But that was kind of his night to shine. Either of you want to jump in?
Go ahead, Wade.
Yeah, I think if I might be misremembering this, but I feel like it was the same week that Hunter Green hit 104 miles an hour on the radar gun. And so at the time, you've got the future down there, and the guy who's back healthy and doing everything he was supposed to do is this uber prospect. Throwing the ball harder than anybody has as a Cincinnati Red, or Aroldis Chapman included at this point. So you've got that on your brain, and then all of a sudden you got Wade Miley out there throwing 86, 87 mile an hour cutters that are just hitting the right spot every single time. And Cleveland just couldn't figure it out. You know, they're jamming themselves. They're fisting everything they possibly could. Nobody's making good contact. And it was another reminder and lesson that pitching is so much more than just throwing hard. And I think that was the coolest part about it, especially because it was early enough in the year where to that point, the Wade Miley signing had been awful. You know, he'd missed basically the entire season before that. And here we are looking up at like the money that they spent, and the Moose contract hadn't been paying off, and Shogo hadn't paid off, and who knew what Wade Miley was. And all of a sudden, boom, early in the year, he's your ace. And doing those kind of things out there too. So it was kind of a launching point for what ended up being a fantastic season for him, but also a little bit of validation, I think, and especially since he was brought in because he'd worked with Derek Johnson with Milwaukee, and there was reasoning behind why the Reds were taking a risk on this soft-tossing 34-year-old lefty at the time. So to see him do that was super, super cool, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think that this one could have been a little bit higher on the list had it happened a little bit later in the season. When the playoff push was sort of at a fever pitch, people would appreciate it a little more. I personally will remember it as the night that I got in the most trouble I've ever gotten with my fiance for staying on my phone the entire time we were at dinner and watching ESPN's GameCast instead of paying attention to her. So thanks, Wade.
Yeah, if she's going to join this family, she's going to have to get used to that. The fact that it was Wade Miley in this era of 100-mile-per-hour throwers, and I like the contrast to Hunter Green, but every team has got these guys. That's the game these days, velocity, velocity, velocity. But it was Wade Miley doing things that pitchers have done from time immemorial, which is hitting your spots, working fast, you know, throwing strikes. I don't know. I love that guy. There's no reason he should not be on the Reds this coming season, and we're not going to discuss that. But I'm a big fan of Wade Miley and always will be. I will also be a big fan of the fact that that Wick, for the first time in 404 episodes of this show, used the word fisting.
I was like, what did I do?
So welcome to the show, Wick.
Make it my mark immediately, right?
And yes, absolutely. Okay, so
back anytime.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. See, where are we on the list here? So that was Wade Miley. The as number five, his no hitter on May 7th was number five on our list. So I think we're back to you, Wick. Right? I've lost track of where we are. Right? For number four on the list,
I can go for number four. August 22nd, the Reds were 12 games above 500 and in control of the second National League wild card spot. Had won 13 out of 19, and yeah, we're basically steamrolling at that time. And we talked about the June 5th switch of Jonathan Ennie to the leadoff spot. We talked about Joey Votto coming. Well, we haven't talked about Joey Votto coming back after being hit by a pitch and busting his finger. That offense was rolling. Like, everybody was there, everybody was healthy, and Luis Castillo had rounded into form after a rough first month of the season. It was a team. You know, we talked about Winker and Castellanos being in the All-Star surge because they deserve to be there. The Reds were in the second wild card spot because they were playing well enough to be there at that point. You know, they'd gotten a little bit healthier in the bullpen, and the early struggles in the bullpen had kind of gotten washed away at that point, but they looked the part of a team that should have been in contention at that point. And so it wasn't a mirage, and it was fun to look up and say, hey, they've got a lot of games left against the Pirates. Maybe they could make this thing special down the stretch, but that certainly was the pinnacle of the Reds being a good baseball team last year.
Yeah, Nate, I'll let you weigh in, but we're talking about top 10 moments, and that moment, you know, that day, August 22nd, you know, the Reds, 12 games ago, above 500, as we said, you know, they're in control of their own destiny. They're in a wild card spot. They had been playing extremely well, and in terms of moments, that was probably the single moment where I was most excited, most, you know, I don't know. I was happy with the Reds since 2013 or maybe 2012. I mean, and that's a long time ago. So, Nate, that's why in terms of moments, that particular moment before they collapsed was fun. But we should have known. They're Cincinnati sports team. But, Nate, talk about that moment and just the idea of being in contention in general this year.
That's exactly it. I look back at that time, and it sort of consumes your every day. Like, you're in the car making these long drives, and you're listening to them on the radio. You're listening to all the podcasts you can find, things you didn't consume, media you didn't consume beforehand, because the attitude is real. Like, the Reds were good. People were talking about it. People didn't want to play them. The team was so much fun. And as a fan, like you just said, we don't get to experience it too often. But when you do, you kind of feel like you're a part of it, especially when you haven't felt it very often. Because it's just a little more special to us than it is Yankees fans or Dodgers fans, maybe. So I'll look back at that time as, you know, putting the games on the TV, listening to them on the radio, making sure you didn't miss a single tidbit of info. Because we were all pretty confident back then that this season was special. And it was special, don't get me wrong.
So I've got a bit of trivia for you all.
Let's hear it.
To kind of tie some things together. How many games do you think Jesse Winker appeared in for the Cincinnati Reds after August 22nd?
Zero? No, one. One. It was the one game, then he got hurt. Yeah, and left. Oh, my gosh. That might have been the difference, right?
And it was September 17th. I mean, it was almost a full month after they were at their peak of that season. He got hurt on August 15th. They managed to stay afloat for a week after that. And then, you know, you take a bat like that out of the middle of the order, and it's amazing how much of an impact. I mean, obviously, it was numerous other things that led to them not being able to pull things off down the stretch. You know, T.J. Antone getting hurt as well. But, yeah, I looked – when I saw that date, I was like, we just talked about Winker. I was like, when did he get hurt? Just went back and pulled up the game logs. I'm like, yep, he played one game after that, and it was one plate appearance. So
yeah,
just it's a what if. That certainly, I think we will remember more and more as this 2021 gets further away.
And it's kind of a numbers game too, right? Like, they had weathered the Votto injuries and the Castellanos injuries with a whole lot of luck, and it ran out.
Yep, it did.
The Cardinals took all of it.
Yeah, they did. I mean, it's also hard to beat that. I mean, if you what did they win? 17 in a row to finish the regular season? 18? I lost count when once the Reds were out. I was like, the Cardinals have done it at this point. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how you compete with that when the devil magic in St. Louis is rounding into form just at the wrong time for the Reds.
But at least we didn't lose in disgrace in the playoffs the way the Cardinals do.
can't let them forget that.
Yeah, right. Is it worse or better if the Reds had actually played well and just got edged out at the end by a Cardinals team playing incredibly? If the Reds just played well enough and just barely lost, I don't know. That might be more frustrating that the Cardinals were so good and the Reds could have won except for them being historically good. I don't know. Stupid Cardinals. Okay, so next on the list is going to be, where are we here? Nate, are we up with you, number three?
Number three is Jonathan India's Rookie of the Year campaign. I wanted this one to be ranked so high because when I look back on this season, I was basing these purely on emotion. Like, how did you feel going back and watching the highlights and the press conferences?
Moments!
This guy is so much fun to root for. He's done his own little victory parade in the offseason. I finally got around to watching the wedding video and some of his vacation stuff.
Nate, quickly, if you haven't seen the video of Jonathan India going nuts at Tyler Stevenson's wedding, you're missing out. Go watch that. Go ahead, Nate.
Yeah, we didn't expect Jonathan India to take over the way he did. We had some optimistic hopes at best, but the way he took this position and he ran with it has really one of the pure joys of this season. We get to root for this guy for a long time. He's good, he's fun, he's young, and man, I could not be more excited that he's going to wear that uniform for several years because he's still very affordable and there's no reason to get rid of him, Mr.
You know, I mentioned beforehand that my list got a little bit cynical towards the end as we're, doing this in December and the Reds have done certain offseason things to kind of diminish your expectations going forward. But I had opening day as number eight on my list, not because of opening day being awesome, which it is, but because they didn't manipulate Jonathan India's service time, which I was going to applaud them for since they've done it to basically every other young player that's come up. But I think that speaks volumes to just how much confidence they had in this kid from the start. And they were like, he's the best option we've got there. We're rolling with him. It's just so strange because obviously number five draft pick, like you had high expectations for him. He'd absolutely knocked the cover off the ball of Florida. And then he got to the minors and, in part because of a wrist injury and in part because he was playing in Daytona and Chattanooga, where if you're a right-handed hitter, you can't hit the ball out of any of the ballparks down there. He kind of slipped a little bit and he wasn't a top 100 prospect anymore. And people had kind of overlooked him and he was a college guy. So he wasn't young anymore. And all of a sudden, boom, he's going to be 25 this year. And we didn't see him at all in 2020 because there was no minor league season. So I think the expectations were, it was almost the perfect mix of no expectations and exceeding performance that he put on display this year, that he really just perhaps the most prove everybody wrong season by a Cincinnati Red. I've seen it a long, long time. And I thought that was really, really cool because nothing about it, aside from getting on base 20, however many times from being hit by a pitch, nothing about it looked like it wasn't just him being good at baseball. And I think that was super cool. And on top of that, and he was doing it in a new position. They just threw him at second base and said, yeah, you can do this. And he looked fine out there too. So that's
yeah, it was good.
I think they found a good key cog, and that's awesome. So props to him on a fantastic year. And when they submitted it with the Rookie of the Year award, he should have won it. So it was glad that they didn't get overlooked there and snubbed because he was deserving of it for months before they actually got the award.
Yeah, I wonder if they didn't manipulate his service time because they didn't expect him to matter in the long run. They didn't worry about that extra year because they weren't that high on him anymore.
They were waiting for Jose Barrera to come up and take his job, maybe. Who knows? That's a good point. Yeah.
That obviously isn't true.
Well, Barrera is going to be our center fielder of the future, I think, because we have a shortstop. No, we're not being cynical today. We're not being cynical. With Jonathan India, we've kind of relitigated this here on the show, but I didn't expect a ton from him this year. And it's not that I thought he couldn't be good. It's just that, he wasn't great. And then last year we didn't see him. We heard these reports that he's going to be good. And I was like, okay, you're going to show me. And I think that's what kind of led to him being such a revelation is that we did not have those expectations, as Wick noted. You know, I didn't have these expectations, and he just absolutely outperformed everything I could have ever expected. And he is a legitimate kind of cornerstone of, quote unquote, the next good Reds team, whenever that's going to be. But if the Reds are going to put together a good team, this dude can play. And, you know, the hair, I love it. I'm jealous. And
the helmet flying off all the time. Yeah.
The hell. Yeah. I mean, he's the type of guy that you really want to see. You really want to see succeed and easy to root for.
Yeah, he can get young people invigorated. Like, he can, like, if you're a young fella, you get that baseball card, you can get excited about that, and that's awesome. Love it.
Oh, you know, I've talked to several people, actually, who said their kids wanted Jonathan India, those jerseys. That's what they wanted for Christmas, or a Jonathan India jersey. Yeah, no, he's fun. He's exciting. I'm happy that he's a Red, happy that he did well. So, who's the last Reds player to start as a rookie on opening day? First star on opening day. Either of you know that? Silence is good for a show. Okay. No guesses?
An hour, or you could tell me.
1988.
Oh. Chris Sabo.
Chris Sabo. The immortal Spuds McKenzie.
My first favorite player.
There you go. Oh, really? Exciting. You
nobody kid.
It did work out where I end up with rookie of the year as well. But who was the last Reds rookie of the year, though?
Scott Williamson?
Wrong. Jonathan India. Before him, it was Scott Williamson.
Should have been Joey Votto. Giovanni Soto.
Oh, Giovanni Soto.
My New Year's resolution is to troll Chad more than he trolls us.
Good luck with that. All right, we're up. That was number three on our list. Jonathan India, incredible season, wins Rookie of the Year. Number two on our list of the top 10 moments for the 2021 Cincinnati Reds was Game 2 of the 2021 season. Game 2. Oh, it's been a long year.
Fresh off the World Series victory over the Chicago Black Sox scandal, the 1921 Reds.
Right.
Yes.
It's been a long year. So, Game 2 of the season, okay? The Reds, in the third inning, they score six runs, highlighted by a Tucker Barnhart home run that took a big 6-1 lead over the Cardinals. The next inning, Nick Castellanos flips his bat. Well, first of all, he's hit by a pitch. The day before, on opening day, he flipped his bat and kind of danced down to first base after hitting a home run. So he's hit by pitch by Cardinals pitcher Jake Woodford. Castellanos clearly thought it was intentional. And so later in the inning, Castellanos scores on a wild pitch and performed the flex heard round the world. Benches emptied. It was madness for a little while, but that's number two on our list of the top 10 Reds moments. Nick Castellanos flexing over this garbage Cardinals pitcher at home plate set the tone for the season, right? Either of you jump in. Whoever wants to jump in. I'm fired up. This should have been number one.
I might be alone in my thoughts here, but for as iconic as the flex picture was, my favorite part of all of that was when he picked up the ball and offered it back to him. Like that, that to me was just frozen in my mind. He was like, yeah, you hit me with this. You want it back? Here you go. Like I think I used that picture on our front page probably 7 or 8 times as often as I could make it relevant for the next month after that. But the flex, obviously, I mean, for one, it was a tremendous play. I mean, he busted his butt around third base, scored a big run, got tackled in the process. I mean, there was a collision there before he stood up and flexed. It wasn't like he was just seeking out this pitcher to do it on him. It was the entirety of that play. We also got to think back about the context of this as well. After a 2020 season where Nick Castellanos was the big signing for a Reds club that was trying to improve and get itself better and re-energize, there we go, that's the word I'm looking for, a fan base that had obviously been down in the dumps for 5 years. Pandemic hits, season shortened, fewer home games, fewer fans, no fans for so much of it. And then the Cardinals come to town on opening day weekend, and he just crushes them. Like, it was a coming out moment for him as a big part of the team. I loved it, frankly. I thought it was tremendous. I think it's the kind of thing that you've got to have that kind of emotion in baseball because it's a sport, and sports have emotion. And so It was a tremendous moment to watch. It was hilarious to watch him get suspended for it and other players not get suspended for it because it's the Reds and that's just how it works. But a seminal moment for the early portion of the season. It really set the tone for how this club was going to be good, you know?
Yeah, I could agree more. The thing about the baseball, I couldn't handle that. It was like, you obviously don't know how to use this thing. If you want to try better,
can I show you?
It set such a great tone for what became a recurring theme for me throughout the season. It was how much this team got along and had each other's back. You saw Jesse Winker was out there just picking off everybody on the perimeter. He's like, you're not going to get anywhere close to this scuffle. I'm going to keep you out of here. Once it looked like it had died down, the bullpen started getting into it. The outfield, Eugenio Suarez is out there making his presence known. And it's like from that moment on, like, we didn't know if the Reds were going to be good or not. We never know if the Reds are going to be good. But I think that as a collective fan base, we really started caring about this team in that moment because there's literally no better way to rally the Reds fan base than to flex on the Cardinals.
Yeah, both of you kind of said it set the tone, and it absolutely 100% did. To me, it was a moment where I know Castellanos is not coming back to Cincinnati in all likelihood. But if he were to come back to Cincinnati, Castellanos becomes an inner circle like fan favorite of all time, and that moment is when it started. And he's still going to end up being, well thought of by Reds fans forever. I mean, he's always going to be a favorite because what happened right after? He flexes and he walks off the field, and who is the catcher that like kind of grabs him and draws him back into it? It's the most unlikable player in the history of baseball, Yadier Molina, the neck tat himself. And yeah, I don't know. It's like everything that as Reds fans is meaningful to us, the Cardinals and Yadier Molina. And, I don't know. It was a moment that in any other year probably would have been the number one moment. I will never forget it, certainly, and I'm glad the Reds commemorated it with a big, banner at the stadium. But, man, that was a lot of fun. So the number two on the list this year of top Reds moments, the flex. Hard to believe that was game two. And, the next game, the third game of the season, Castellanos tripled in the fourth inning, hit a home run in the fifth. And the Reds routed the Cardinals 12-1, and man, I was fired up. I was all in on the Reds at that point. And then they, again, Cincinnati sports. So I'm going to go ahead and say number one on our list, and I'll let each of you all kind of analyze a little bit. Number one on the list was Joey Votto's streak of seven consecutive games with a home run. That's the number one Reds moment of the list. Nate, I'll let you start, and then we'll bring in Wick.
Man, I talked about it earlier, looking back at when you were most excited about this Reds team. And I think that has to be it for me. Like, that was must-see TV. And fun fact, Joey Votto became the only player in MLB history to hit a home run in four consecutive games at Wrigley Field. Don't fact-check me on that. I did not do extensive research, but I saw it somewhere once. Now I'm quoting it to all you all as fact.
Stupid Cubs.
Joey Votto, we go on and on and on, and we will, I think now I've kind of decided we will do a podcast this offseason, just a Joey Votto podcast. But while we're here, that was one of the coolest things in my baseball fandom. He was on the verge of an MLB record. Everybody nationwide was talking about it. I couldn't miss a game. Every at bat, I had it set up for all the notifications to like make sure if I was busy somewhere, I was getting notified that Joey Votto was up to bat and he had a chance. ESPN was picking it up. I can't go on enough. We said it a million times, but gosh, that was so special. And just like the flex, I will never forget it.
Joey.
If I'm remembering correctly, he had eight home runs in those seven games also, right? There was a two.
He did not. He had nine.
He had nine. There we go. He had two
multi-homer games.
And missed game number eight by 5 inches, 4 inches, 2 inches, something like that, in Citi Field in New York. The record itself is tremendous. That it came in Chicago against the Cubs was even more tremendous. But more than anything, it was like, it was, you know, we'd seen enough from him before that to say, oh, this is a new Joey Votto, like dating back to August 26th or whatever it was, 2020, when he changed his swing after being benched. Like, he's onto something here. But it is at that point where we're like, is he the best player on the Reds again? Like, it wasn't just good again. It was like, he's the best player on the Reds again. Or at least the best offensive player on the Reds again. And it was kind of one of those indications where it was like, they weren't first row home runs. You know, they were crushed. You start looking at a StatCast page again, which is something I kind of stopped doing for a year or two because I didn't want to look at how good it used to be. But all of a sudden, I was back on there every single day and be like, what was the exit velocity on that one? Like, where are his ranks? Or is he in the 93rd percentile on exit velocity now? And what's his barrel rate again? Because he was atop the leaderboard again. And like, that's what I always used to go for Joey Votto, was how many, you know, iterations better is he than everybody else at what he's doing? And he was doing all of that again. And so the home runs were exciting to me, and the streak was exciting to me. But it was more that he wasn't getting cheated by being there, and it wasn't something fluky. It was, he figured it out again. And for a 38-year-old Joey Votto, it's like, all right, well, thankfully we've got him for at least two more seasons, because nothing about that looked like it wasn't something that he couldn't find a way to sustain, at least in some form or fashion going forward. Whether or not it's ever as good again as it was for that glorious week, I don't know. But he showed enough there to say he figured out how to not be bad again, and he's going to be a very important part of the Reds for a long time again going forward. And so it was that dueling excitement for me, because when Joey Votto's being Joey Votto, there's nothing better than that, and that was pretty quintessential Joey.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince Cincinnati Magazine to delete a piece that I wrote, one of the columns I wrote, when I was kind of despairing over Joey Votto. Was just, it's you know, Father Time, right? Father Time's undefeated, and Joey Votto, and it was looking like that. And then, he gets benched. It's such a great story, really. He gets benched, and he comes back, and wait a minute, he's good again? What just happened here? And that's because he's a Hall of Famer. It's because he's a unique player. I've never seen anything like it in a Cincinnati Reds uniform. I will never doubt him again. And I guess, Wick, I'll ask you this really quickly. What can we expect from Joey Votto in 2022? Because now I just don't know. I mean, he could do this again and be great, but he's 38. What do we expect?
I mean, I think he said it himself. He's like, Joey Votto still bangs, you know, and I think that's the important aspect of it. It's that it wasn't just that he found another way to be good. He said, as we talked about before, he always wanted to be the most on-base player in baseball. That's no longer his priority. He's still good enough to where that's a pretty solid residual byproduct, where he can go out and throw up a 370 on-base percentage or 380 or whatever it ended up being. But he realized, I may be old, but I can still hit it just as hard as anybody else in baseball. I'm going to do that and see what happens. And this was the result of it. So I think his premise going forward is going to be, I'm going to swing as hard as I can and try to hit it as hard as I possibly can. This is the result we saw this year. Yeah, he might hit 260 next year. But if he hits 260 next year and he stays healthy, I mean, he did all this with a month on the sideline with a busted hand and still led the Reds in home runs this year. I expect him to hit 30, 35 home runs next year. I think that's where I am. And no, it won't look like a vintage 2015 470 on base percentage Joey Votto season, but that's not what he's trying to do anymore. And what he's trying to do is be good in a different way that he knows he could be. I expect him to do it. I don't see a decline from where Joey Votto was this year to somebody who's unable to hit home runs next year, especially now that he's got the entire offseason to kind of roll with it, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. Nate, go ahead.
And I think that's the most exciting part for me. It's the most Joey Votto thing I can imagine. He decided to completely change his game, and within a calendar year, he became elite at that one thing.
If somebody had told me that Joey Votto was going to lead the Reds in home runs this year, I would have said, "Oh man, this is going to be a bad year."
Who did they trade at the deadline? Right. There's nobody else around.
Exactly. So, and that's number one. I think to me, a pretty clear number one in the top 10 Reds moments of the year. That 7 home run streak. 7 consecutive games, Joey Votto hitting home runs. So let's move now quickly to the news of the week in Reds world. Yeah, there's no news of the week. So let's move on to – nothing's happened. It's, you know, post-Christmas, before New Year's, nothing's happening. And that's why. It's because Nick Kroll was just resting a little bit. How about some viewer mail? Okay, we got to do some. We've gone longer than I expected, so we need to do some kind of rapid fire viewer mail. These questions come from these are actual letters from actual viewers at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. That's patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. First question. I'll take this one myself, and then see if any of you all want to weigh in. It comes from our buddy Joe Farsing. Question is this: which former Red would you want to sing a duet of "Auld Lang Syne" with, and why is it Johnny Cueto? Well, obviously the answer is Johnny Cueto. You answered your own question. Johnny Cueto is maybe he's top three most likable Red of my lifetime. So yeah, it's Johnny Cueto. Although, honorable mention's got to go to a guy that I talked about on the Twitters earlier today, Dimitri Young. I like to see Dimitri Young doing that. So, either of you have a comment on who you want to sing "Auld Lang Syne" with here on New Year's Eve?
I do have a buddy who actually went to a bar in Cincinnati after a Reds game and had a wonderful time with Johnny Cueto. Apparently, he was passing out shots left and right. My answer goes to Adam Dunn because I feel like he's going to be a little bit toasty. And that rendition is going to be heartfelt and sincere.
Yeah, about midnight. Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to go with Bronson Arroyo because I can't sing. So hopefully he'll get to sing for me.
Well, absolutely. All right, so there we go. Next question comes from our buddy Joey Gaditza. Joey, the Canadian from Canada in this group. Happy New Year, guys. Have there's three of us, but have any of you at some point in your life been so intoxicated on New Year's Eve that you don't even remember bringing in the new year? Interesting question. Joey, the answer for me is no. I'll let you guys jump in there.
Rick?
Yeah. One of my absolute best friends since I was 2 years old's birthday is December 31st. So his 21st birthday was an afternoon well spent, and we woke up the next day and it was New Year's. So there you go.
Nate, that's going to be yes, right?
Even if I have, I wouldn't remember.
There we go. Who knows, right? Oh, mercy. All right, next question comes from our buddy Calvin Medcalf, another international member of the family. Calvin Medcalf says, Happy New Year. I'm going to be tough and ask you to go deep into the future to this time next year. What would you predict will be Reds fans' favorite moment of next season? Prediction for what's at this time next year, what's the top in our top 10 next year's podcast? What's the favorite moment? To me, it's obviously game 4 of the World Series when the Reds sweep the World Series and win finally another world championship. That's what's going to be. Wick?
Looking at our list right here, I'm going to say it's when Joey Votto spends all offseason annoyed that he only hit 9 home runs in 7 games and hits 10 and 8, most of which come in Wrigley Field. How about that?
There you go. Because he can.
Because he can.
Yes. Nate?
Love it. I had also Joey Votto hitting home run number 45 on the season as a walk-off on the last day of the year to clinch a wild card berth for the Reds.
You know what's interesting at this point is, can Votto catch Johnny Bench for the most home runs ever in Reds history? He needs, what, another
58?
Yeah, somewhere close to 60. 50, I think that's right. So, I think he probably will.
Johnny Mitch was good. June of next year.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, next question comes from
he probably started doing the math this year. It was like, I got to hit 35 a year-ish to get there, so I'll hit 36.
Let's do it. Yeah. And would anybody, I wouldn't – if Joey Votto really said, I got to do this, I'm not going to doubt him. All right, next question comes from Kyle Kapler. Kyle Kapler asks, which player on the 2021 Reds had the funnest – I'm not sure it's a word, but the funnest name to say. Kyle is going with Ashton Goudeau. Which name is the most fun to say? Ashton Goudeau. We have no Luis Albertos on this year's team, but
unfortunately.
I mean, there's some good names. I thought about Mike Moustakas, but you know who I'm going to go for here? Max Schrock. Max Schrock for me. What do you think, Nate? What's the most fun? What's name is most fun to say? Gudeau's a good one.
I'll never stop enjoying saying Jesse Winker.
Okay, there you go. Winker. Wick?
I believe moment number 10 started with Reaver San Martin. So Reaver San Martin is a good one for a number of reasons, but also because it makes the Sonny Gray trade look a little bit better each time he goes out there and puts up some zeros. So, yeah, Reaver.
Absolutely. I will have to say for Ashton Gudeau, I like the fact that he was a Red because I kept making the dumb joke about he sounds like a director of the French New Wave, which like four listeners that care about movies will understand. But that's me, and you know, we're 404 episodes in. You're gonna have to deal with it. Next question comes from James Urban. I'm gonna toss this one to you, Wick. Curious where you guys stand, asks James Urban. Do you think the lockout is fixed? It's over, I guess, before the season starts. I'm worried it may bleed over into spring training and put the full season in jeopardy. So this is actually a legitimate question. Where are we with the lockout by the time spring training starts? Wick, what are your thoughts?
I think they play 162 games in 2022. I wonder whether or not it's going to be on the schedule that we were used to for 162 games. I think spring training gets muddied a bit. And they find a way to get things ramped up and going. I almost wonder if it becomes a precursor that spring training ends up not being as long and as formal as it always has been, because they realize they can pull off a season without having to do that. So that's my best way of saying no, I think.
Good answer. Nate?
I tend to agree. I think that spring training is in some sort of jeopardy. If, you know, I'm not too worried necessarily about it being non-existent. I think we'll get 162. I don't know if we'll have opening day as regularly scheduled, but yeah. It's going to be impacted a little bit. It has to before real changes are going to be made, I'm afraid.
I think there are real things that they're fighting over this time around, and it's going to take some real negotiation. But the fact of the matter is, we've talked about here a couple times, spring training is a pretty big moneymaker for most teams, and it may be diminished somewhat, but I think there's enough incentive to get the season going. I don't see the season being impacted in terms of 162 games. I mean, you know, spring training may be impacted, but again, and maybe it's just me being optimistic, but that's my opinion on it. I think we all agree on that. Rex Scott, a couple more questions here, then we'll get out. Rex Scott asks this. Happy New Year to everyone in the family. Am I wrong to be feeling optimistic about the prospects for the Reds next season? The potential starters look solid, the bullpen at least serviceable, and the lineup remains a potent force offensively. Our divisional foes don't seem overly daunting. I know our front office and ownership constantly degrade and embarrass us, but I think we can be competitive next season, even given their ineptitude. Am I right or seriously deluded? Well, yeah, both of those, Rex. But Nate, what do you think? Is he right, or is he just deluding himself?
No, he's not wrong for being optimistic. This is what the offseason is for. It's baseball. We talked about it earlier. We didn't expect a couple of these young guys to contribute the way they did. It's not crazy that if a couple new young guys come up and play a little better than expected, that boom, this team's right back where it was last year, hopefully better. Lose to Castellanos stinks, but man, like, what is the point of being a baseball fan, or specifically a Reds fan, if you can't get optimistic about unrealistic scenarios?
Yeah, we've kind of touched on this the whole show, which is that this team's got a pretty good core. You know, they're going to be fun next year. They're going to have a shot of being competitive next year, despite ownership. So I think you're not wrong, Rex. Wick?
Yeah, you look up at where this team is. It's got a lot of good pieces. It's got two incredibly promising arms at AAA waiting to contribute this year. And it's got a payroll that's been trimmed down to about $100 million. Like, you give that blueprint to 15 GMs across baseball and they would jump at it. They'd go spend $35, $40 million and turn into a great team, you know? So yeah, like there's optimism there. There sure as heck is. The question is this, are they going to do it? Or are they just going to look up and be like, oh, we got close. You know, we'll see if we win 83 games with what we got. You know, because that's that was the bummer of last year. They didn't fix the bullpen. They gave away Raisel Iglesias. Like, they gave away Wade Miley and Tucker Barnhart. Now, like, you got a lot of really good pieces. A lot of GMs, you know, Jerry Dipoto would take this roster right now and make seven deals and sign somebody to a big contract and be like, we're as optimistic about this year as we've ever been. I just don't know if that's what they're going to give us the opportunity to find out.
It could literally be a World Series team. And right here, I don't know if you can see it on the video, but that's a single tear falling down my cheek. No, there are reasons for optimism. We're going to continue to talk about those reasons for optimism because this team is not bad. They're not. You know, we had those 90-plus loss seasons. This is not that team, even though we're not optimistic necessarily. But this is not that team. They're a lot of fun guys. I don't know. I think there's a reason for us to stay interested. I just wish that ownership were as interested as we were. But, again, that's a different story. One last question. This comes from our buddy Hooper Powell. Hooper asks this. What do you think we'll see first? A salary floor or a salary cap? So some people talking this week about let's have them both. A salary floor or a salary cap. Now, I don't think the players will ever agree to a salary cap. I just don't. But can a salary floor plus a salary cap work? I don't know. Wick, I'll ask you to go ahead and weigh in on this one.
Yeah, it's a delicate way of kind of framing it. For one, I think a floor is one that we would see before a salary cap, obviously because the Players Association doesn't want to put any sort of cap on what it is they can make. This is also the very uniqueness of baseball, which is that you can spend $70 million and go to the World Series. You can spend $270 million and not go to the World Series. You can't do that in other sports. And so that's been the weird, intricate aspect about how baseball is, in part because, also unique to baseball, your future is already part of the franchise. You've got dedicated farm systems. You've got next year, 2 years, 2 years, 4 years already, for the most part, drafted it in your system. So when you're not paying it to the big league level, you're still spending money on other parts of it that doesn't necessarily get counted as payroll. I think a floor is something that could work and probably should work. How they impact revenue sharing in that is the big nebulous topic, because currently you've got the big spending teams kind of subsidizing the smaller spending teams. The fact of the matter is that there are a good number of franchises out there that don't do what they need to do to be competitive every single season. And that's got to get fixed. And I think if it doesn't get fixed, there's got to at least be a financial penalty, so to speak, of them spending more money so that the players don't get left out in the cold. Even if the team isn't intending to compete that year, the players deserve the opportunity to still get those good jobs. And so I think a floor is one that certainly makes much more sense. It probably is what is going to end up happening in some regard when these talks finish at some point this winter before we start the 2022 season.
Nate?
Yeah, I agree totally. The floor is the answer here. There's already a de facto salary cap. The competitive balance tax, you get punished. The luxury tax, you get punished. Draft picks, you get penalized. What's it, and revenue sharing. I think there's only one team this year that was above the luxury tax threshold. I think when they collectively bargained in 2016, every single team, there were six that were above it then, is below it now. So spending too much money isn't the problem here. I think another reason that the floor is the answer is because a lot of these bigger market teams that are spending more money, when it was negotiated last time, they didn't dictate where the revenue sharing needed to go. I think you're going to see a lot of these big market teams that are saying, hey, if we're giving money to these lower tier teams and they're putting it in their pockets instead of using it in their roster, that's a big problem. You
know, good point.
Most noise are going to have something to say about that. So I think a floor is much more realistic, and a floor that directly applies to the Major League Ball Club. You can't just say, hey, I'm using this money on player development. It's going to need to be the active roster. And that's awesome because you want to see more of these like mid-30s relievers, people that get cast aside for younger, cheaper, controllable guys getting a chance.
Yep.
Here's what I say. My opinion is this. We need to have a salary cap because I want Bob Castellini to make more money. So we need to have a really low salary cap because Castellini's losing money, man. I mean, I feel for that guy.
I wanted to bring this up. I know some of the Slack family wanted to also, especially with Wick here. So what do you think about that MLB trade rumors report that Castellini is the lowest net worth of all owners?
To be the primary owner of a billion-dollar franchise and have a $400 million net worth, just the math of it, it's like, okay, would you own 17%? And if you do, and you're the richest of the people that own the other 83% combined, suddenly you understand why the Reds have so many complicating factors when it comes to spending money, because you got to get it approved by 19 different people, most of whom are valuing every single $1 million that's out there much more so than Steve Cohen is. And so with two people throw up their hands, you're kind of beholden to them because you don't own enough of the team. So yeah, that was not surprising, but certainly eye-opening in its relevance. And it's why the Reds are where they are right now.
Obviously, if you don't know sarcasm, you know you don't understand this show, because I was not being serious, obviously, about worrying about Castellini's pocket. But okay, if you're too poor to own a team, this is my response: sell the team, that has money and wants to spend it on the team. Sell the team, Bob. Hash brown. Sell the team, Bob. All right, that was the last question, wasn't it?
That was it.
Wow. Yeah, we're done. Nate, any final thoughts for us here?
No, that's it, man. Wick, really, really enjoyed having you on. So much fun. Please come back anytime. For everybody out there listening or watching, please go and click all the buttons that let the interwebs know that you like us. And comment if you want to. You can be like that one guy who said he was grateful for the video because he could see how pointy I was.
Yeah, pointy your head was. That wasn't nice, was it?
Yeah, adding video to podcasts is a whole other arena out there. So, thank you all both for having me on. It's been a blast, and I think I kind of like my Reds heart needed this to finish the calendar year 2021 to get rid of at least a little bit of the bitter aftertaste that the offseason is put out there, and recall that the season itself, despite the fact it didn't end up going anywhere. There was a lot of fun to be had, and a lot of that is still there and still coming back. And maybe, just maybe, as we tie the holidays together, but the little Grinch in my heart, we'll start being a little bit more optimistic about things as we start this upcoming season, because there were some fun moments that hopefully will replicate themselves next year. So thank you guys very much for having me on to talk about that. I think I needed that. I did.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's exactly what we're hoping to accomplish here. This was a fun team. They were a fun team, and we don't need to forget that. Wick, do you have any final thoughts about Arsenal Football Club in particular?
I believe they are currently in fourth, which is the Champions League spot, which is above where Tottenham is in the standings. So yeah. talk about talking things into existence. I think I just shot them in the foot for the rest of the year. But it's been fun so far. How about that?
All right, well, Tottenham has Antonio Conte now, and they're coming for you, baby. Right. Spurs are coming. All right, so this was episode number 404 of the Riverfront Show. Thanks to Wick Terrell, obviously, from Red Reporter. Go to redreporter.com and follow everything he's writing and doing over there. The fantastic site, and has been for a long, long time, even certainly longer than Red Leg Nation. Thanks to Nate for joining us today. You can follow The Riverfront. We're at Riverfront Cincy on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. Go to the YouTubes there. Give us a thumbs up and smash that subscribe button. Just smash it, okay? We're not talking about fisting anymore, but you can smash the subscribe button. And nobody's listening this far into the podcast. It doesn't matter. Nobody's listening this far. Audio, you know, if you can listen to The Riverfront the same place you've always listened to Red Leg Nation Radio Podcast. Wherever you find podcasts, we're there. We're at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. This is our last podcast, our last show of 2021, which has been a rough year for a lot of people. We recognize that. I want to say thank you I want to express how grateful I am for everybody that listens and now watches this show every single week. I don't know why you do it. You probably shouldn't. I'm encouraging you to find better hobbies. But I really am grateful for the fact that you're here, you're with us, and we'll never forget how much we enjoy that. So for Nate Dawson, for Wick Terrell and for the legend, Joey Votto. This is Chad Dawson saying, so long, everyone.
Hey guys, time to get in on the action for the biggest moments in basketball with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projections, place your entry, and win up to 100 times your money. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit of up to $100. Just download the Prize Picks app and use the code GET100. That's code GET100 on Prize Picks for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.